Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Earlier this month, the Woody Guthrie Center announced the acquisition of a family archive of a contemporary of Guthrie. Folk singer, songwriter, producer, author, and radio show host Oscar Brand. As one can see just from the titles, Brand wore many hats. But perhaps foremost among them was his work for decades championing folk and Americana artists on his program Folk Song Festival on WNYC in New York. There, beginning in the 1930s, he featured artists and musicians like Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, The Weavers, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, B.B. King, and Joni Mitchell, just to name a few. Brand was often called the Dean of American folk music and was an important part of the folk music revival of the 1960s. Now, over 500 items are in the collection, which is being sorted and cataloged by my guest today, Kate Blalack, the Senior Archivist for the American Song Archives, which is the umbrella for both the Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan archives, along with the collections of Phil Oakes, Tom Paxton, and now, Oscar Brand. Blalack is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Kate Blalack, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, earlier this month, the Woody Guthrie Center announced the acquisition of Oscar Brand's collection. He was a folk singer, songwriter, producer, radio show host, a good friend of Woody Guthrie. And this was announced for the Woody Guthrie Center. Who was Oscar Brand and why is he important?
So Oscar Brand was a multi-talented, multifaceted person. He was described by many people as a walking encyclopedia of folk music. So he sort of dabbled in all of the areas related. He was a talk show host. He was on several television series, probably most famously known as, I guess, the character Oscar the Grouch is based on Oscar Brand because he was instrumental in the children's television workshop that started Sesame Street. He had several Broadway plays that he wrote, 8 published books, almost 100 LPs. He was mentioned in over 75 documentary films. He was the music director of NBC for a while. And he ran, probably most notably, the longest single-host radio show program called the Folk Song Festival, started in 1945.
During that time, he championed folk music. He became a leading person in helping revive folk music in the early 60s, you know, that all the young groups that were all of a sudden rediscovering a lot of this old music. And he also was like a producer and songwriter. He wrote songs for popular music of the 40s and 50s. What was the relationship with Woody Guthrie?
According to Oscar, he met Woody Guthrie in 1940 at the Labor Department Auditorium's showing of Grapes of Wrath. Mm-hmm. And this is also memorable for him because he sat next to Mrs. Roosevelt. So he was sort of this person that permeated all these worlds. He produced an incredible amount of material, and yet he was sort of always on the sidelines. So he was with Woody. He knew Woody well. He said that Woody, he never saw him angry, except that when he was on stage. So if the audience was not reacting well to what music he was playing, he would play the wrong chords. If they were not paying attention, he would try to rile them up. But as a person, he described Woody as sort of a shy person who wasn't really rattled by a lot. He said that he was very good at advertising. So Woody liked to advertise whenever they were having events. And so that's kind of his main memories of him, although he calls him one of 3 of the greatest writers of verse in the U.S. So that's something important to remember because Woody really self-identified as a writer, and so did Oscar Brand. I mean, and Oscar Brand is very outspoken about, he has a healthy sense of confidence about his writing abilities. And that's how he started out. After the war, he had a degree in psychology. He got a BA in psychology. So he was originally from Winnipeg. And so it was later in 1945 when he and Pete Seeger were in Greenwich Village that he, in developing people's songs and sing out, that he really got back into the folk revival.
So obviously he was a big, important person. He was friends with Guthrie. He was friends with Pete Seeger. He was a champion of those music. Because was he really a folk performer?
Or
yes. He was a folk performer.
He was a folk performer. He has almost 100 LPs. I think we have 75 in the collection that were gifted with the family papers. So what we have to iterate again is we have the family papers. So this is the collection of his children that they have given us. So Jeannie, James, Jordan, and Eric.
How did that come to the Woody Guthrie archives?
After his death in 2016, he bequeathed most of the papers to the Library of Congress. So the Folk Festival tapes went to the Library of Congress. But the family had a small collection that they had set aside, and Jeannie, his daughter, called our director at the time and asked her if this would be something that we would be interested in, because she wanted to make sure that the family legacy items had a home. And that's sort of what we end up doing a lot right now, except for the purchase collections. We have a lot of family collections. So we have the Phil Oaks family collection, which is from his daughter, Megan, and then we have Michael and Sonny, his sister and brother. So that's sort of what we're doing in the folk, I guess, collecting area. But she called. They had a conversation. We really felt that he needed to be home. We are a little superstitious in the archives at the Woody Guthrie Center, and we sort of feel like his spirit is still with us. And we feel like he calls his friends home, you know, to get a little bit esoteric there. But first it was Woody, and then it was Phil, and then Tom Paxton, and then Bob Dylan, and now Oscar Brand. And we just sort of feel we're this magnet pulling them home. And so he was instrumental in the movement in so many ways. One story that Jeannie, his daughter, told me recently was that he could go and sit at a diner, and he would ask somebody where they were from if he noticed their accent, and he could sing a song from the exact region that they were from. That's how good he was at this. So
obviously he was this autodidact when it comes to folk music material in all these various regions. So what's in the collection that the archive considers important?
Well, the collection is largely ephemera and then artifacts from the family. So just to give a quick rundown, we have clippings, we have program flyers, awards, correspondence, LPs, books, photographs. We have a lot of VHS tapes, which we are going to digitize. And then we have some more interesting artifacts. We have his guitars, clothing that he wore, almost everything that you would find in a family collection. But we do not have a lot of unpublished materials, which you will find in a lot of archives. So that's why I say that this is largely an ephemera collection. So most of this will be used on exhibit. However, one thing that Dr. Latham, who works at TU, pointed out to me when I was mentioning this to him is that even though it is largely ephemera, there's lots of cases of after the fact archives have copies of things that the family members or somehow the originals got destroyed. So it's still incredibly important for posterity that we save all this. One of my pieces that I really like the best, I guess, is the oil painting I Love Cats done by Rob Grossman. He also did it for an album of Oscar's called Get a Dog. But Oscar loved cats. So you will notice in this portrait that he is surrounded by cats. And I was really introduced to him by reading The Folk Singer's Daughter, which is by his daughter, Jeannie Brand. And it's about her relationship with her father and growing up. And that was one thing she mentioned is all the family cats they had. So that's kind of a unique item in the collection, which will definitely be on display.
Yeah. While this is his collection, his family collection, does any of it relate to Woody Guthrie? Is there anything we can glean about Woody Guthrie from this particular collection?
Well, this collection doesn't have anything in the collection that's particularly speaking just to Woody Guthrie. We have part of a manuscript, One Hell of a Ride, which was a biography that he was writing where he mentions Guthrie, and you'll have to come in to see that if you'd like to read more about that. But I think probably one of the most significant things is he allowed the singers that were blacklisted during HUAC to perform on his radio show, because he did not do this for pay. So the radio show, he was the host and he never got paid. That's not how he made his money.
It was all volunteer.
So that is exactly how he was not censored.
Interesting.
And that was very important to him.
Interesting. If they were paying people, probably some aspect of the blacklist would have entered into it.
Right.
Because it was a volunteer, and in those days, public radio was all volunteer for the most part. So he was able to showcase these performers that didn't have any other outlet.
Yes. And he was involved with the political struggles for certain, but I'm going to say he was very, I don't know that a lot of people would describe him this way, but he was definitely altruistic, as were most of the folk singers. We can't think of anyone that we would name that we would say isn't, probably.
Yeah, you're not in it for the money.
But he also had a great deal of diplomacy. So he was very well-mannered. I would say he was very ethical. And so I think that he was probably able to come across as a more, if we're talking about people getting real upset politically, as a more like reasonable, calm, controlled personality. Mm-hmm. Controlled personality. Whereas, you know, like a lot of the singers who get very riled up, I'm thinking of Phil Oakes. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, people were more apt to listen to him in a more relaxed, neutral manner. That is completely my opinion. That is not anyone else's. That's just my take on him, just having listened to him and how he presents himself. He told his children that he had a mellifluous voice. Yeah. He had a huge vocabulary, was probably a genius. One thing that he mentioned about Woody is he said that Woody was remembered for his words, not as being a celebrity himself. And I think that that is how a lot of the folk singers saw their work. And I think that Oscar Brand was definitely in that vein because he produced so much. And yet we know his words, we know his music, we know his plays. We don't know the man. And I think we have a lot of museum visitors that are the same way. They sort of have a vague idea of this land is your land. They know the song. They do not know the person. And there's sort of a persona to Woody Guthrie. And then there's the man behind the persona who is this very multifaceted, very multi-layered personality. And Oscar Brand is the same way. But the Almanacs were on his show. The Weavers got their name on the show. They had this relationship of helping each other. Now, the way that Woody made a lot of his songs known is performing for unions and labor workers. So for Woody, he was important for many reasons. He, of course, let Woody perform on his show after he was blacklisted. But he was part of his entourage, I would say. So he did perform with him. He was with him. He had him on his show. I'm going to say they were good friends, but they were also, the friendship would probably not go as deep as we would think like Woody and Pete Seeger would go. So I'm trying to think of like a scenario where you have a group of friends.
Colleagues, if you
will.
Yeah,
colleagues.
My guest today is Kate Blalack. She's the senior archivist for the Woody Guthrie Archives. And earlier this month, the Woody Guthrie Center announced the acquisition of Oscar Brand's collection. He was a folk singer, songwriter. He was a producer, a radio show host, hosted the folk music show at WNYC for many, many years, championing folk music. He was a champion of the folk revival, and he was a friend of Woody Guthrie, and it's been donated to the Woody Guthrie Center. It's the family collection. So let me ask you, this is a good question for all of these family collections that the American Song Archives, which is the overarching group that holds a lot of these archives, the Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, and some of the other ones that you've collected. What is the value to researchers? What can they glean from this addition to the archives?
The value of primary resource collections is that you are, as a researcher, you are observing tacit information that is not available in secondary sources. So
you're not reading a book about it, but you're actually going back to the original.
You're getting your impression. And in addition to that, when you look at these items that were originally owned, created, worn, used by these people, is you're getting information that you may not normally get. So here's an example, and this is a completely made-up example in this case, but if you have a guitar, say, that's owned by Woody Guthrie, we do have one. It was restored. It was found in a thrift store. It's a Maybell. And he's inscribed his name inside and outside. We know the scale of the guitar, and Woody was a tiny person. We can see places where perhaps his hand has worn the guitar away. So now we know how he's held his guitar. The lyrics that he writes, he usually puts an anecdotal paragraph on the bottom. So when you're looking at the published lyrics, you don't get all of that information about how he wanted it to sound, the backstory behind the song, why he came up with it. There's also handwritten information called marginalia on a lot of these items that were hand-owned, which give us even more information into this person's life and context. Because in archival collections are different than museum collections because they are cataloged in a different way, and they are cataloged using finding aids because they are meant to preserve the entire context of wherever the collection was from. So we do not reorder things. We actually, archivists traditionally do not conserve things. We preserve things. So we keep them as is as best as we can and make sure they have a very good environment, but we don't actually interrupt the integrity of the item or add to the item in any way.
Let me ask you about that. The difference between conserve an item and preserve an item.
Right. So preservation involves just making sure the item as is stays as close to as is as possible. So one thing, a really, you know, I guess, easy way to think of this is digitizing materials. So we say that digitization is preservation of items, but it's not preservation in the traditional sense. The reason that it's preservation is because you are now handling the items less because you can look at the digital version or listen to the digital version, but you're really creating a duplicate, a surrogate. So we don't consider like this to now be the archival thing because we've made this digital thing. The original is still the archival item. So, and then in conservation, you're actually enhancing the integrity. So a perfect example is rebinding a book or taking off moldy scraps, you know, from a guitar and restoring it. That would all be conservation.
Or cleaning a painting, for example.
Cleaning a painting, exactly. Yeah. And I actually, that is my strongest part of my background is preservation, so that's the skill that I have the most of.
Well, it's really interesting because when you're dealing with people like Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan, for that matter, a lot of times they're writing on acid, acidic paper.
Yes.
In pencil. And, you know, that disappears.
They're always writing on acidic paper.
Yeah.
After 1850, everybody is writing on acidic paper.
And so, and they're writing in pencil, which the graphite tends to disappear, become illegible.
Well, the other thing that they write with a lot, especially Woody, is fountain pens, and that fades fast. It's not permanent ink. His are a specific challenge because he wrote on, you know, manila paper and just anything that he could write on. So Woody's papers are a challenge. Oscar Brand, what we have of his are typed, so that makes it a lot easier for us. But we do actually have his address book from 1966, so that makes three. We have Phil Oak's address book, we have Woody's address book, and now we have Oscar Brand. So there's a little spotlight case.
Now, what can a researcher learn from that address book?
Who they knew, where people lived, what was going on in the time period. You can look at where the notebook was purchased. That's how we have identified several of the Phil Oaks notebooks, as it will say on the front cover where it was. This was in Peru that he purchased this or something. So the address books are very interesting. And I'm thinking in the same way that telephone books are. So especially for somebody who's investigating where a person lived geographically or, you know, how people interacted, who knew who, you know, 3 degrees of separation.
My guest today is Kate Blalack. She's the senior archivist for the Woody Guthrie Archives. Earlier this month, the archives announced the acquisition of Oscar Brand's private collection, family collection, and it's now been added to the Woody Guthrie material and the archives of other people from this era that's a part of the American Song Archives. And just to let people know a little bit about the overarching philosophy of the American Song Archives, what determines what you're collecting, what you're trying to preserve, and what are sort of the guiding philosophies, if you will?
We collect based on our collection development policy, which in actually as we speak is being revamped because we have to look at it every few years and revamp it. So right now it is Woody and his contemporaries or people who use their musical abilities for social justice or advocacy or equality. So we look specifically at that for folk musicians who do this. In addition, we collect research materials around this. So we have the Ronald Cohen collection. We have Edward Cray. We have Joseph Klein.
Yeah, and most people would not know who these people are.
Right.
So who are they?
These are biographers. Well, actually, Ron Cohen is one of the foremost folk music scholars in the U.S., and he's retired now. But so we have his papers, which are incredible, and they are the largest research collection we have. So this would involve any type of research materials that these authors collected, which is extremely helpful for other authors because they can basically not have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
And there's often little bunny trails in the collection that can lead them to other collections that can help them find what they're looking for. So they are incredibly important. And these were gifted. So when the Woody Guthrie Archives was purchased and brought to Oklahoma, these research collections were gifted. Another one that we have are the papers, the managerial papers of Harold Leventhal, who was Woody's manager and many of the Focusing Years managers, as opposed to his political papers, which are here at TU.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you guys also have the original House of Earth manuscript of Woody's. The rest
That's
we
true.
Have. But we focus on that. We are having to be more selective, of course, because Bob Dylan is a very big name. And so we have a lot of people who would like to add our collections. And so we are honing it down a little bit to make sure that we are collecting primary research material because we will run out.
Bob Dylan is contemporaries with 50 years of American music of all forms and stripes.
But I know that we are looking at building our women's collections and people of color. We are definitely working on that. A collection that I would really like to get would be Lead Belly's, because I would love to bring him back to the gang.
How much material is there about Lead Belly? Do we know? Oh, tons?
Tons. Now, there's Tarika Dean, his granddaughter, runs the Lead Belly Foundation, and she's probably who you should talk to about it. But yes, there is a lot of material out there about Lead Belly. Woody has a lot of material about Lead Belly in the collection.
There's probably some Bob Dylan material, too, because
there is.
Yeah.
There's definitely Bob Dylan and Ron Cohen and several other of the research collections. I feel like when people ask me about him, because I'm also learning about Bob Dylan right now, I tell everybody, when you think about an archives like this that holds personal papers collections, because that's what we call them really when they're from one author, they're called personal papers, even though these are all artificial collections really. It takes you as much time to know the collection as it would a person.
Mm-hmm.
It's how much time you spend with them. It's how deep you go with them. That's how long it takes. So when people are like, oh my gosh, you've been there 9 years. I'm like, yeah. And now I feel like I can talk about Woody a little bit because now I've known him 9 years, give and take. You know, the same thing with Bob Dylan. I read Chronicles Volume 1, and then I haven't read a lot more since then because of these other collections. And I'm thinking, okay, that's as if he like saw me for like 3 days while he was on tour and then he left. That's about as well as I know him,
and
you know,
so
that kind of thing.
You're just scratching the surface with Oscar Brand.
Right. Oscar Brand is the same. Well, yes. And Oscar Brand was so prolific that I will be learning about him for a long time. And his family is extremely supportive. Jeannie, his daughter, has worked with me the entire time, making sure that photos are identified, that papers are identified correctly. So they are very passionate about this, which also helps.
Right.
It helps when the family's involved. So,
may I ask a general question about the American Song Archives? How often are researchers actually in the archives looking for material? And I guess in this day and age, a lot of times they're, you know, computer requests from somewhere else.
Right.
But how often are archivists and researchers looking at the archives, trying to understand more about some of these artists and these people?
All the time.
All the time.
I'm running around all the time. Yes. This month I had 3 researchers almost every day, which is a lot for one person. People are very passionate about this. I get a lot of people for Phil Oakes, probably more than Woody, but we have 2 fellowships that we do every year. One is through the BMI Foundation, and that is an award for fellows who are interested in researching Woody Guthrie. And then we have the Phil Oakes Fellowship Award, which is a separate, which is through a still small voice. And that is Phil Oakes or any of his contemporaries, all using the archives here, because we realize people have to travel. Because of the proprietary concerns, because a lot of this material is unpublished, I mean, people will say we have 3,000 Woody Guthrie songs. We have more than that. We have more than that. The man wrote on everything, and most of that is unpublished. And so we do have to be careful of that. And people do have to come in. We don't just provide that on the open web because we, especially with lyrics, because unintentionally someone could be reading these lyrics and decide they're going to add them to theirs and then copyright. So we do have to be careful with that.
Now, I know a lot of times discoveries that are maybe gleaned in these archives won't show up until somebody publishes a book, but have there been new understanding of these artists from things in the archives, some of the ephemera, the marginalia, and the like that shows up in these archives?
Definitely, because what you are seeing in most of the published materials is a very polished face for these people, a very biased face, and it's not anyone's intentional. It's just the twist that you're getting from this or that author. So there are always new discoveries. I'm sure everyone remembers the Will Kaufman article that came out about Woody's time in Coney Island living under Trump in his apartments. And that was a new discovery when Will Kaufman sent that out. We have an anonymous letter. We have a lot of unidentified items that are just waiting for researchers to tell the full story.
Yeah.
People who are interested in uncovering more of history. So we have a lot of Easter eggs in there for people who have new ideas.
And when you have an unidentified item like that,
right,
is that your task to figure out what it is, or do you really wait for a researcher that has an interest in the document?
It depends. Now, because we do have an extremely small staff, that is not usually me. In a bigger archives where I was like the curator of Oscar Brand, and that's what I did, because that's usually how you start out. You start out as like a processing archivist. We're really librarians. We're librarians who specialize in historical documentary information. So you start out as a processing archivist, and then you start to get to know, you develop a subject specialty. I'm in the middle of developing mine. So you have a very long career curve. You really have to get to know something. And yes, that would be part of your job, because part of our job is access and description.
Right.
So yes, 100%.
But with a small staff, I guess you really are relying on people coming in to use the collection, looking at the document, go, oh, I think I know what this is.
Exactly. And the more I learn, the more I'm doing that myself. But it's also really fun for the researchers when they find something and they get to make the discovery.
Yeah.
So.
Well, when will we see material from this collection in the public part of the center?
I am hoping soon. So right now, they are in the middle of planning the exhibit calendar for the next couple of years. There will at least be a spotlight case, but hopefully a larger exhibit, including Oscar Brand, within the next year.
All right.
So it'll be awesome.
All right. Well, Kate, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kate Blalack is the senior archivist for the Woody Guthrie Archives and the American Song Archives. Earlier this month, the Woody Guthrie Center announced the acquisition of the family collection of Oscar Brand, over 500 items devoted to this folk singer, songwriter, producer, and radio show host who championed dozens of important American folk and Americana artists. I want to remind you, Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory, and I'm Rich Fisher. We're going to leave you with audio of Oscar Brand from 1995 on WNYC. He's doing a song about when he started doing his radio show on that station back in the late 1930s.
When I was in college a long time ago, on the city's own station I broadcast a show, the Municipal Building 1939, built by WPA, said a fresh painted sign. They still weren't finished, so I sang my song to the beat of the hammers and the grins of the throng. Fiorello LaGuardia rushed in to see what was making that noise in Studio B. Well, I left for the army in 1942 and served for 3 years till the Axis was through. Then in 45 I joined this station to stay with the program of music that's on to this day. O'Dwyer and Pelletieri, they stood the next watch. Then Lindsey Beam Carey, and then Edward Koch. The pressures were heavy, if only you knew. But if Dinkins can stand it, I guess I can.